One of the gifts of this year, as we will journey through the season of Easter, is that we'll be accompanied by this first letter of Peter. And Peter writes, we don't know when, there's no real tags to indicate when he was writing, but he's in Rome, and we know that after we leave him in the Acts of the Apostles, that he's continued that work. He's gone beyond Jerusalem, beyond that initial place where he felt called. And he's continued to preach and proclaim, but now not just to the Jewish community. It seems that that incident that we read about in the Acts of the Apostles with Cornelius, this foreigner, and this sense of Peter, now like Paul, feels called to go beyond the boundaries of Judaism and to invite the Gentiles as well, the pagans, into this life. And he begins to describe, as he introduces this letter, as I said, written from Rome, but written to the Christian communities in Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey. And it's a circular letter, so it's not addressed to a particular community, but to a whole collection of different communities. Perhaps he's been to some of them. Most of them, he's never been to. And they, like us, never saw Jesus. They, like us, have only been able to encounter God through the witness of others. And so Peter is able to bring in all of his own experiences, all of those moments where he was in that room, in that upper room, petrified like all the others, overwhelmed with the grief of the death of Jesus, but the grief of the way that he'd betrayed his friend, betrayed his master, betrayed his Lord. And so Peter gets all of that from the inside. And so as he writes to these pagans, now become Christians, now become believers, it's interesting that he uses the language of the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures. And he describes them and refers to them as if they were Jewish, as if they had been brought into the covenant, because they had. They have, through the death and resurrection of Jesus. Everything has changed, and everything has been transformed because they are now no longer what they once were. Everything has changed because of their faith and belief in Jesus. And so as he describes the scene, he's kind of setting out the boundaries, the parameters of what this community is capable of. The opening lines we don't get, but he's calling them the chosen ones, the ones that have been set apart to sing the praises of God. And like Paul, he addresses them with grace and peace. He's calling them into the truth of who they are. And then he's beginning to describe, you know, how broad and how amazing the space is that you have been invited into, because it's this temple of God's glory that all of us are capable of being, like in the first reading where Luke describes this beautiful scene of the early church there in Acts 2, that everyone's sharing all things in common. This call and this invitation to trust in one another, to trust in God. That all of that is also, Peter tells us, available to this community. That this community is being caught up in the wonder of this God. But it's not just human dimensions. It's not just about breadth and width. But it's also about the height that we're invited into. This glory of what God has prepared for us, what God has now hidden for us in heaven. That God has left this inheritance, this gift, this grace for us that we're able to receive, that we're able to be caught up into. Now, just as, you know, we might put a beer in the fridge But no one ever thinks to get into the fridge to drink the beer. You know, you take the beer out of the fridge, or you take the Coke out of the fridge in order to drink it. So the inheritance is not there in heaven. It's there for us to experience the full flourishing of God's life and love here on earth. And that transformation that happens when we begin to live the way of the gospel. Now, we have heard about this in the gospel tonight, this gift of the Lord, who knows what we've been through, who knows our limitations, who knows that we so often still get locked as a community even in that sense of despair, a sense of the lack of trust, a sense of just being overwhelmed. And it's so much easier. The Catholic Church is really good at keeping those doors locked, making sure that no one gets in, making sure that no one is able to experience the life. And if they do come, you know, that we just ignore them anyway. But here, this community is changed. First, the presence of Jesus. He's just there. The locked doors aren't enough to keep him out. And note, three times he issues that command. Shalom, peace be with you. Because he knows we need that peace. He knows that we're not going to experience that transformation without that peace. And as I was reflecting on this during the week and trying to kind of put myself into this scene, I imagine that Jesus wasn't content to just kind of stand at the pulpit like me and just to kind of make these decrees over the community. I imagine that he went to every single one of those disciples. And no, John doesn't say it's just the 12. It's this larger group of the community, men and women. Perhaps even some children are there, perhaps a little bit like we are tonight. And one by one, he would have gone around. Because every single person there needed to receive that gift of peace. Every single person needed Jesus to breathe on them. COVID friendly or not, he was there breathing on them, offering that new life. In the Valley of the Dry Bones, that whole sense of this, you know, that was that experience of Israel, locked in exile. Just as the community that Peter is writing to thinks that they're so isolated and separated from what God is doing. And yet, that community needed to receive first the sinews to come together, the bones to begin to form and to reshape, and the skin to be over that. But it's only when God breathes his life that, of course, we anticipate and we long for with the coming of Pentecost, that we need to receive that breath of God's life. And why? So that we can become the church. So that we can be the community that God wants us to be, forgiving sins, offering that new life, sharing that gift with all those around us. That's what this transformation is all about. And even though Thomas has these doubts, Jesus doesn't seem fazed at all by any of those things. He doesn't seem shocked or scandalized. Instead, what does he do? The invitation is just directly there. Thomas, here, come. Put your fingers into the wounds in my hands. Come, take your hand and put it into my side. He doesn't discourage him. There's no shaming Thomas for his doubts, his questions. Jesus is there inviting us into this experience. Nothing is ever outside the realm of God's love and God's mercy. And when we receive that peace, and when we truly let the breath of God be before us, when we let the Lord stand before us and breathe that life into us, then we can receive that. Then we can be changed. Then we can become the people that indeed, even without seeing him, as Peter says in a second reading, and of course as we hear at the end of the gospel, even without seeing him, we can believe, because this breath of life is possible for us. So let's be the people that God has called us to be, to share all things in common, to live the life of common prayer, to to be people changed and transformed because of the breath of God and the peace that he pours out upon us and upon his church, so that we can be the ones on mission, that we can share that love and that life with all those around us.